SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour three. Mike Beer back with us, and as promised, we were going to check in with the Beer, and every opportunity like this, and this is perfect, a $57,000 pick six carryover on this nice Monday card that features the Coronation Cup, 5.5 furlong, turf sprint, you got turf marathon as well, and all different levels. Got a maiden special going along on the grass as well, and this is a challenging sequence. Before we talk about the pick six, we get some thoughts from Mike on the weekend. Mike, good morning.
Hey, Steve. Good morning. How's it going?
Good. It was nice to have two nice days, even though races one and two were off the turf on Saturday. It really did feel like Saturday and yesterday got us into a bit of a normalcy after the soggy Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, you know, the weather doesn't always right up here, that's for sure. But, yeah, we had a couple of nice days over the weekend. And, it was also interesting, I guess, to get, you know, because it sort of felt like the focus of the weekend anyway was for the three-year-olds, you know, getting ready for the Travers. And so you had, you know, the Friday race over the wet track, and then you got the fast track on Saturday for the Jim Dandy horses, and then you got the Good Magic on a totally different track at Monmouth. So I felt like those were the three, you know, the three races of main focus over the weekend, and they all, you know, looked a little bit different. And I think it's sort of interesting as far as evaluating those throws headed to the Travers, because they're all going to be coming from different directions,
including from Woodbine, which I think took everybody slightly by surprise. You know, usually when those rumors of a filly getting involved, usually they typically don't pan out. But this, not only was it a mention, it was aggressive. And Wonder Godot adds intrigue.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, take a shot anyway, I guess. I mean, she certainly, like, the distance is going to be a problem for her. And, you know, we'll see what happens going forward. But at least as of now, you know, which one of the three-year-old colts are you afraid to race against? I don't see why you're that afraid to race against any of these horses right now. Obviously, they could still improve. I don't know how you feel about, you know, the three races, the prep races over the week, Steve. I was pretty impressed with Hofburg. I know it was a wet track, and it felt like to me like maybe it took him a little while early in the race to sort of in his stride, but once he did, I liked the way he won that race, and it was in fast time. Obviously, he got a 100 speed figure for the performance. I liked his performance of the three that we saw the weekend. I liked his best, and I quite a bit. He seemed like the kind of horse that everybody felt like was going to eventually try to be pretty good. And I think you have to be pretty positive on him right now, off of his curling for sure. You know, it was a wet track, but other than that, you know, if you have Wonder Goat, I'm not sure how good I really think she is, but you know, she wants to go that far. That's for sure. And again, I just don't think these three-year-olds are anything special right now.
Well, the number power starting to come into focus, too. The numbers from the Haskell just came up. The buyer, 98 for Good Magic. Hofburg had got 100 on Friday. So they're kind of hovering in that same vicinity, 93 for Tenfold in the Jim Dandy. Why not, a mile and a quarter, the dividing line, once you get past that mile and an eighth, it's a, you know, less of a known quantity, but she coming off that Queen's Plate and the Prince of Wales, you don't have any worries about her staying on.
Yeah, that's the big equalizer too, right? She may not be quite as good as them, but that mile and a quarter makes a big difference. Especially, I think, with a horse, maybe more than the others, with a horse like Good Magic. I don't know how. I mean, listen, he ran a race in the Derby, so I don't know if it's really fair to him to say that a mile and a quarter is, you know, not really up his alley, because he really did run well that day. But I don't know. you know, we'll see if he can, you know, continue along that path. I guess he ran well. I don't know what your take on the Haskell was, or if you've had a chance to like really go back and look at it. I went this morning and I he ran well, but you know, I just blown away by his performance there. I mean, there was really no way he was going to lose after, you know, the trip he had in that race. It's not like anybody did any real running behind him. Once he took the race over on the second turn, you know, he won it easily enough, but it's not like he was getting away from that field at the end of that race. He didn't come home fast at all. I don't know. I thought he ran well, but I wasn't, you know, blown away with his effort yesterday.
Well, undoubtedly, though, you can understand moving on to Travers, and it's a nice mix and match, at least. No matter where we stand with the three-year-olds, how about Tenfold, and give us a take on the Jim Dandy, kind of a scattered finish with horses dancing right in every direction.
You have to decide with Tenfold how easy did you think he was going to win if he didn't, you know, start, you know, for whatever reason, started to drip down very badly at the end of that race. Because it did sort of seem to me anyway, like about the 3/16 pole, like he was going to win that race pretty easily. And then for whatever reason, instead of finishing the race off, he just started to make a right-hand turn. I don't know what that was all about. You know, he's one to me who I like him, but, you know, clearly he's the one who has to take a big step forward in the Travers.
Well, we just had Steve Asmussen, and when Ricardo Santana addressed media, you know, minutes after the race, he thought that the TV board kind of spooked him. Steve Asmussen said that once he saw the head-on and he watched the replay a few times, he thinks it's the camera stand, and that when it came into focus, and with, you know, the bodies, and, you know, people are, you know, there's like usually three photographers up and down the camera stand, he thinks that caught his eye, and that's might have been more the thing that got to him. So, and it's interesting too, because the minute Steve said that, I looked at the PPs. Sure enough, all of his work had come on the Oklahoma, and he said he'll be more comfortable sending him over now. You know, there's places you see this. Keeneland is a place when a horse runs at Keeneland for the first time, on particularly the main, and when they come around the turn for home, the building is at a funny angle. It dog legs, and right. I've had many trainers say that at Keeneland the horse will be startled the first time they run there, because the building is sort of in a different place in their field of vision than they're used to, and they are creatures of of habit. There's a great study when they were trying to figure out if horses saw color. And I remember reading this, and what they did was they took barrels and had a paint pattern on them, and they would move them, or they would move the positioning of the colors on the barrel. And sure enough, the horses, they figured out, I think they figured out that they see things in sort of a sepia tone, that very, you know, very modest differences in colors. But when if there was a dark color on the top of the barrel and light on the bottom, and then if they flipped it, that would freak a horse out. if they were used to seeing a certain thing in a certain place, and then suddenly they don't. It's like, what's going on here? What are you trying to do to me?
There's got to be some reason that Tenfold doing that stretch. I mean, it's not, you know, for no reason. So, you know, there is at least some kind of valid excuse for it. Just because, you know, he's the kind of horse you want to keep getting better, and you want him to show up in the Travers and actually run a good race. Because he seems like he could be a you know, one of the better second half 3-year-olds this year. So I hope it is something like that he wasn't prepared for it.
Mike, I'm getting some of that phone distortion. If we can figure out, put you back in a...
Is this better?
There you go. That's good.
Very good.
That was good.
Got to hit the right spot.
Some other thoughts? How about some wagering? What have you been hitting? And we've heard a lot of people grousing. Haven't heard a lot of people say how fabulous they're doing.
It's hard to get lucky at Saratoga, that's for sure. I actually been doing pretty well. It's very early to meet. Hopefully things will continue going the way they're going, at least for the first few days, first week and a half or so. Today was a chance, necessarily want to talk about, any one race in particular. But yesterday was a chance for me that really could have basically made my meet yesterday. Came very close to doing it. I really liked Grand Motion's maiden in the sixth race yesterday, Strike, and made a big bet on him and actually made a pretty big exact on the horse to beat him. The fact that he wound up down meeting for a second, it hurt me a little bit because he did a favor and that cut down my exact a bit. But for catching the ticket that I cashed in that race, it's got me off to a good start with the meet.
Very nice. Good work. The best part, even for those of you that have not had the best of luck, and there's been, people that have had takedowns, there's been a ton of photos that, you can lose last Saturday, not this week, but the week before, opening Saturday, that sequence of noses.
Right.
Some people literally... If the photos go the other direction, the meet's made. It's that close, and so just stay steady. Don't panic.
Yep.
It's
right.
A marathon, not a sprint. We say
that's
it all
exactly
the time.
Right. There's still a lot of time.
Well, let's dive in and take a look at this sequence today, and we start, of course, with the Smithwick. With a lot of fun. All eyes on Iranistan. Who may very well be an emergent jump star at the age of four. Very unusual. So Darren Nagel and Jonathan Shepard, that starts the day. And then we get into a $57,000 pick six carryover. Got to figure probably about $300,000 will come in on it. So a little under $500,000, $400,000 or so, you would think. And it's a good sequence, Mike. And it starts with a quirky maiden claimer, where if the favorite doesn't win back right. to his roots, then right. things get murky in a hurry.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, when I was looking at this pick six, so there was going to be a carryover.
Mike.
I did look at this race. Are you good?
We got to find a better spot for you. We're losing. No good. No. Nope.
Hold on. I can.
It's funny. They're...
Hold on. I'm heading. I'm
all right, I'll wait for you. Let's see.
I don't
see.
Know, Steve.
That's better. There you go.
It's better.
A little bit.
In a bad spot. A little bit.
No. Then.
No good.
Then we lose you for it. It's funny. You'll start a sentence and sounds good, and then it gets distorted.
And then it gets distorted?
No, right there is good.
Let's see how far we can go here.
Stay there. Okay.
Anyway, as far as the first goes, I really did like the favorite. Obviously he doesn't have to win that race. Who knows what happens with the first. But the favorite that we're talking for, Sean, back to his roots, he actually run well first time. He was at this level at Churchill, just chase, and he didn't break that great from the gate. And then after that, he just, wound up in a spot where he had to chase a 3-5 favorite around the track, and he just couldn't get to that horse. He had on the rest of that. He actually ran well first time out. I felt like he could run something close to that he'd probably win. And as far as the pick goes, I would probably be leaning on him. I hate to lean on a horse like that, but I probably would if I play the pick six.
That's my inclination, and it's funny, when you start handicapping a sequence and you get a race like this and you say, well, there's my A and a few B's, and then all of a sudden you keep handicapping and you realize, Oh boy, I'm going to have to really lean on this horse in the first leg, because the rest of the sequence gets very deep.
Yeah, it doesn't get easier from here. You're right. I sort of felt the same way. He's not the kind of horse maybe that you'd necessarily want to, you know, have a, you know, most of your ticket tied up in. But the way the sequence plays out later, you know, I felt like personally that's probably the way that I would do it.
Well, let's move to the second leg. And here's a maiden special, 1 3/8 on the inner turf. And there's at least four. And a case could be made based on the contributions from Mike Welsh in the Clocker Report, Mike. Hampton Point and High Promise, both on first pass, I didn't use. And then I go look at the Clocker Report, and they both got raves.
True. And this race to me was really tough. And I, you know, High Promise was a horse who I did. I wanted to use him somewhere anyway, and Clocker Report definitely pushed me over the top with him. You know, they've only gone along with him once. And while he wasn't able to, you know, stick around at the end of that race, that was a really tough race to stretch out for the first time, and for him going along for the first time, that was really fast and contested pace for that kind of a race. So I think he ran even better that day. So, you know, he was one I wanted to use. Really, to me, this race, and I'm not against Ed Brown's horse, I didn't really see, for a course correction, that is, I didn't really see that he had a big excuse last time. He did get to the lead at about mid-stretch, or maybe got out in front, and then he got out finished. And it's not like he had a huge excuse. But that was a pretty strongly run race. And I just sort of felt like he might have faced a better field last time than he's facing today. So I'm happy to give him another chance. I did think he ran pretty well first time out at Keeneland over soft turf. So if it's not a distance thing with him, you know, you're a little concerned about that. But if it's not a distance thing, you know, I think he's in a good spot here. And I just really didn't like Mott's horse. It's not that I don't think he can win, and not that I would suggest if you play the pick six, you don't want Prompt on your ticket somewhere because he's won okay. But, you know, his last two races, you know, I just sort of felt like he could have won one of those. I don't know. I'm not thrilled with him as one of the favorites in this race. But, you know, he's a tough horse to leave out of the pick six. I'm with you. I would want to, you know, spread around a little bit in this race if I could.
Well, and what about Midnight Tea Time for Mr. Campbell?
Yeah, he's one of the horses that I definitely wanted to use. I even, you know, am not, even Shug's horse, you know, My Dream, I'm not sure ultimately how good he turns out to be. But, you know, it does sort of feel like this is probably what he's going to want to do, is go long on the grass.
And see, here's a situation where, depending on your budget, and if you want to lean on Back to His Roots, you may use six in here.
Right.
You could go 1 by 6, and give yourself a shot. But things don't get easier from here. Suddenly, you're staring at a turf sprint stake, the seventh, the Coronation Cup, and there's actually. You almost wish that, and sometimes that there isn't a carryover sequence or, you know, pick five that we get caught up in and that kind of thing. Because as a standalone race, there's some prices in here that would be really fun to key.
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. And I'm with you. And I don't really, I'm hoping not to tie too much money up in multi-race wagers. Because this is one of the races that I want to bet on its own. For a couple of reasons. One of the main reason I want to bet it straight up is because I want to bet number 5, Tesora, in this race. And she's, I don't know, we'll see how they wind up betting it. She's 12-1 on the morning line. If she's anywhere near that price, I'm definitely betting this horse. I don't love her return from the layoff. She came off the layoff at Delaware in June. It was in a stakes race, though, going long. And, you know, the pace of that race was pretty fast. And she just didn't really fire. She just sort of went evenly in that race. Not that she didn't do anything special in there. But to me, the two races that she ran as a two-year-old last year, if she's the kind of horse that it looks like that she was in that race, in those two races, then I'm happy to bet her in this race at any kind of a price. I was really impressed with the two races she ran last year. They sprinted her first time out. And, you know, I think there's a case to be made that that's really what she wants to do, is go shorter. She was super impressive winning that day. And I'm just happy to bet her in this race. As far as the pick six goes, you know, it was her and Originator were sort of my two main horses in here. So I think Originator's a good turf sprinter as well. You know, the morning I knew, I don't really know. I don't really like any of her races necessarily. I do think 5.5 is probably a good thing for her, but I'm just not sure that I think she's that good. And I think Chad's horse, Bricada, is interesting sprinting again. She's been a little bit of a money burner, but, you know, she's had some excuses along the way. And I think maybe sprinting is okay for her. She actually debuted at this distance up here last summer and did not look poorly in that race at all. So I was mostly, you know, those three horses, Bricada, Tesora, and Ernator, if I was going to play Maltese, but I'm betting Tesora to win in this race.
Interesting. And one horse you didn't mention that I'm going to key off of, I think, is Originator, the Artie Schiller for Ian Wilkes.
Yeah, definitely. And she, definitely, if you're playing, he's not horse. Yeah.
Well, I mean, she broke her maiden in Florida from off the pace at 5 furlongs. Well, you got to be kidding. I'd love to go see how many turf sprints at Gulfstream on, you know, on Hallandale Beach Boulevard where they run the races.
Right.
You know, we're one from off the pace.
She was so good in that race, too. And then, you know what? She's actually run well. They've cut her back for the last 2 years. She run well in those races, too. I mean, she had no chance in that Churchill race with that horse wiring the field on a slow pace. I mean, she had absolutely no chance in that race. She Originator's pretty good.
I'd like one when it comes to the turf sprinting. The only person, and you know, you've discussed this with Andy, and almost no one except Linda Rice makes turnbacks work in turf sprints. Nobody, and there's no good explanation. And I've asked Linda on the air to explain why she can do it and nobody else seemingly can.
The you have a good answer.
No, I don't know. I don't think she did. But this is a horse that obviously is better suited. I mean, you can see her perk right back up with her two turf sprints.
Yeah.
And, you know, she ran into Road to Victory up at right. Up at Woodbine. 6-1 is fine with me, yep. And she's going to get overlooked, too. I think we'll get all of that 6-1.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. She's a huge player. I like Tesora and Originator, but definitely the two main horses for me. But I feel like I have to bet Tesora in this race.
Now, I'm also going to use Factor of One, 8-1. Clement is taken over there. It's a great group. You know, Catalano, Flashly, yep. Is sneaky in here.
I agree. She ran well first time. I think this is a tough spot to make your second start because she's facing some real good horses today, but she ran well first.
And the, you know, in terms of figures, I wouldn't think too much of it because it was an as she pleased kind of a performance. So she could be this good. And the Catman got a little lucky yesterday.
Big win.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's very true. I don't want to take too much away from her though. She ran a nice race in there.
Yes,
Farrell. You know, it's interesting when you go back to look at that. I was happened to be just down in front after that race was over, and Chad. So you know, obviously the big story there was Wildcat. Everybody wanted to see what she would do. I actually felt like she ran really well in that race, and she came back blowing pretty hard from that race. I think she might have needed that one.
Interesting. And, of course, the undefeated Chilean Triple Crown winner. And she looked the part. She's a big, pretty filly. And Farrell, it's funny, if for those that worry about physical properties of horses in the paddock and on the track, she was dripping wet. And it was not a warm afternoon. I mean, she was she got hot in the paddock, and I didn't see her out on track, actually, if she cooled down a little. But in the paddock, she looked, and you know, physically like you would knock, and then she went out and ran hard and ran well. Let's go to the third leg of this pick six sequence, and actually, the third leg, the fourth leg, the eighth race, and a starter allowance that I thought was plenty tricky.
excited. I don't really have any direction to really push anyone in this race. This would certainly be for me if I was thinking that this would be one of the races I want as much coverage as I could take. I think a lot of different horses could win this race. I want 15 Nocturnal Mission. He's third off the layoff, the sloppy track, first time back. They stretched him out to a mile last time. I like him cut after this race. I did think he started out his career in New York. Not he's going to be a real good horse, but, he was okay sprinting. So I picked him on top and would be happy to give him a chance to run a better race today. But, it just feels like this is such a well-matched field that a lot of different horses can win. So I would use as many as I could afford to use in this race.
I ended up putting Maho Bay on top, third choice. So you might get, who knows,
$9. You could do worse than taking Joe Sharp horses right now. Anyway, he certainly brought the right ones to start this meet out. He's off to a very good start at this meet from only a few starters.
Very true. Let's look at the late double. Mike Beer is with us, DRF_Beer on Twitter. And here is another 1 3/8. This is a conditional allowance. And you can take out Bobby Roboto with Soluble and Maker's other horse, Bronson. And Bronson and Solio were coming out of the Stars and Stripes. And Solio was trying to get to Catch O&D that day. This is a very good group. Adonis Creed probably sets the pace. Classic Covey, Scholar Athlete, Channel Cat. This is another where five or six look capable of winning.
Yeah, it does. This is not an easy race either. It's going to be interesting. I struggled with it a little bit. Solio, I don't know. I hope maybe you could help me out with this horse. It does sort of look like, since Maker claimed him, maybe this horse is now going to, finally start delivering on what looked like a lot of early potential for him. He started out his career like he might be an okay horse. And I don't know, man, he never really ever put it all together. And, maybe based on his last two races, he is going to start doing that now. And I guess if he does, then he's just in the right spot here and he'll win. I kind of wanted to try and beat him. No, I'm not suggesting in pick six. I think in the pick six, you probably have to use him. He's got the right running style. He's going to be right up close in it. And he has improved in his starts. I just don't really trust him. I liked him at the beginning, and I just feel like he never put it together. If he's done it now, then maybe he wins. I'm gonna play against him, and I'm gonna do it mostly with two horses. I'm gonna do it with Classic Covey for Mott, who did stretch out effectively when they tried the Pan American. He got a perfect trip in that race. But it was a good field, and he actually ran. It made me feel like he can go this far. And, he had an impossible trip last time. Not that he ran great, but there was just no way. He can't go a two-turn long-distance race at Belmont Park and be four wide and chasing the pace the entire way while a good horse is controlling the front end. You just can't like that. I think he had an impossible trip and a legitimate excuse last time. So I'm going to use him, and I'm going to use Chad's horse Focus Group, who, who knows how good he ultimately is, but I thought he came back from the layoff. He returned at Keeneland and at a mile and a half. And I think stretching his horse out in distance is a good thing for him. And he was sort of, to me, a similar last time. There was no pace in that race. They took him to last, and he was just trying to close all through the stretch in a race that was not coming back for him. I actually feel like him better than it looks last time. And I'm going to try and beat the favorite with those two horses.
Well, fair enough. Classic Covey, absolutely for me. Scholar Athlete at 10-1, I'm interested in too. Here's a horse that has cleared the condition and is the only one in for a tag. And we saw, speaking of Joe Sharp, those purchase angles, whether it's the waiver claim or whether it's horses that have won multiple times where other horses are in a right. condition, you know, trying to win their second other than. These kinds of horses can fit beautifully, and yep. at 10 to 1, I'll take all the scholar athlete I can get.
I agree with that. He fits really well in this race, and he's another one too. He's got, you know, he's got tactical speed where he's just going to do anything wrong with them. He's not going to be compromised by the way the race is run. His best race makes him a huge player, and he's actually a very good price on the morning line.
Get to the nightcap, and these are state-bred maidens. You got some droppers. We got a bunch of different things going on, and you have to make some hard decisions here as well. Maybe a horse like Unparalleled in for the tag of the first time, and you know, has run a couple of races good enough to graduate at this level. Lady Camille adds Lasix for Duchess View and Michelle Nevin, and her horses have run quite well. She won for Samantha Siegel yesterday. Magical Romance, Carlos Martin, second time starter, always like that. You got the always clever Mike Lerman and Chutzpah, an MC filly, the first time starter who has worked cleverly.
Yeah, this is a little bit tricky. I you know, just looking at the race straight up, thinking about the picks, I'm happy to give Michelle Nevin's horse Lady Camille another chance in this race. She really is. I feel like she probably is a better turf horse, and you know, they dropped her to this level last time and switched her over, and she didn't win, but she ran the best race by a mile. I mean, that's one of the most unlucky losses you could probably take at Belmont. You know, not that it was his 11, but you know, on a four wide pace the entire way of track, not getting over anywhere near, and still making the lead in the stretch, and then just getting run down late. I mean, I'm convinced that she ran the best race last time, and if she runs as well here, first time Lasix, you know, I think this is a great spot for her to break through. Musical Romance, I'm with you on second time starters. After having a race, I'm a little turned off that she's a fuddled, making her only her second career start. That doesn't do that much for me, but maybe she can take a step forward. I was going to use a little Union Patriot for Tom Worley. I just think it's the right class drop for her. I mean, she's run a couple of races that are okay. You know, her recent form obviously isn't good. I like her going shorter. I obviously like the class drop for her. And I guess I would use Merlin's as well. Huge excuses, but she's improved since David Dawn put her back on turf. That's what she's bred for. And she ran fine last time. I didn't think she was great, but she's fine. So I would definitely use that horse as well.
I used Merlin's Muse in addition. This feels like a disaster waiting to happen this race.
I agree.
You'll watch it in slow motion. Exactly. Mike, terrific. I appreciate it. And good to get into a little bit of a routine. Yeah. Of course, Mike's analysis daily, 6 days a week here at Saratoga, and DRF_beer on Twitter. Mike, good luck today. I'll see you in a little bit. Mike Beer, folks. Let's take a break. Still plenty to do. That includes Chuck Lawrence. Going to check in with Chuck and congratulate him on the Bowling Green win. He and Matt Shearer, they were quite content. Chuck, was it Chuck or was it? It was Matt. Matt said to me, "What do they do? What do they do with the photos? What? He must never. I guess he's never had that opportunity." I said, "Well, they'll take a picture with." He said, first they'll take a picture with your group or Bill Mott's group, and then you know they'll do the same thing with the trophy presentation. I said, although sometimes I've seen, depending on how big the groups are, the connections, that they'll get in the picture together for the trophy presentation, which is cool. And there's the, once in a while, you'll see, I'm sure there's somebody out there that own horses that, where they've taken a picture with both horses in the circle. I've seen a couple of those. It's pretty, there's nothing cooler. What other sport can you decide something at that level? by you know, splitting up the, divvying up the proceeds. Chuck Lawrence joins us next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses. We build racehorses.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, about 15 minutes to the top of the hour, and to send you out into the race day, Chuck Lawrence is going to join us in a minute. Finally, the Andy Beyer really ruminated on the sprints from Saturday, and the Vanderbilt and the Amsterdam, and of course, you know, the Amsterdam 6.5 leading to 7 for the for the Jerkins, and Imperial Hint comes back. In fact, they both come back. They both come back at 108, and that's interesting. We might have to have Andy come on and explain, you know, how he dealt with this, because he obviously really struggled and must have gone through the race day really carefully. I mean, these races were back to back. So it's not as, you know, can't really make any decision about how the track might've changed, because it probably, although there was plenty of moisture. There was plenty of moisture in that track. I mean, you could see it. You could see that misty mud that, you know, horses were coming back, you know, with plenty of mud on their chest and on their legs. And that was one of the things that Johnny Velasquez talked about when it came to Vino Rosso and his, you know, his early disinterest in the footing. So we'll probably get Andy tomorrow, and I want him to talk about the process. But big figs, obviously, here for the two sprinters that turned in outstanding performances. An outstanding performance on softish turf from Glorious Empire, Chuck Lawrence and Matt Shearer, combined with another success and a dead heat. Channel Mark Maker and Bill Mott's team, joined by Chuck Lawrence. Congratulations, Chuck.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate the call.
Not at all. I was looking forward to this, and always happy when Matt does well with any of the horsemen. You and George Weaver and Carlos Martin all get horses from Matt. This was a great story, though, because this is a horse that clearly had potential to wire this field, and he went out, ran a courageous race. Talk about the time you've had him, Chuck, and how you've worked with him, and what were you trying to do on Saturday?
Well, we knew he was a talented horse because he'd been all over the world. They wouldn't have shipped him all over the world if he didn't have the talent. And the first time I worked him, I told Matt, I said, he's one of the best, if not the best, I've ever had in my barn, work-wise. And so mapped out a strategy to get him to Saratoga. And the goal wasn't necessarily a stake. It was to get a win at Saratoga. And we were so impressed with the win at Delaware. And the Hall of Fame rider, Edgar Prado, told me when he came back, he said, you know, Chuck, this horse really galloped out well. He said, I wouldn't be afraid to try this horse a mile and a quarter. And, of course, we went another eighth of a mile further. But Matt mapped it all out, went back from previous Bowling Greens and looked at it and said, you know, being 20-1, they might just leave us alone on the lead. And it just worked out.
Julian Leperoux, so good in that scenario. We talk about jocks, and you know, people think when there's riders that close, that's one-dimensional, that's all they do. He is terrific on the front end, and it just felt until the last couple of strides that when it became apparent that Rosario was making steady progress. Talk about those last 75 yards.
Well, I think that Julian did a beautiful job turning them off, saving all the ground. He punched him at the top of the lane, and he burst away. I thought we were home free. Of course, that the turf in Saratoga, you can never be sure till the wire. But I was pretty confident at the wire. I thought our head was down and head was high in the air. I thought we had it, but I'm happy to have the share the wins. So.
How many dead heats have you been involved in over the years?
Actually, I was in one at Delaware Park as a jockey, a steeplechase jockey, and I think I've had one other as a trainer. It's just such an exciting win, and to win a crazy race at Saratoga is just you know, having grown up coming to Saratoga since I was a kid, it's a huge honor to win there at Saratoga.
Chuck, and you bring up an interesting question: is that your first graded stake win on the flat?
It is not. I've won the Lawrence Realization at Aqueduct back.
Oh,
when
wow!
I first started training for Mrs. Clark. It was a grade three back then. It was one of my first years training, and it's I've had several stakes wins in New York, but not graded.
Of course, the Lawrence Realization was an important race. It's been gone for a number of years now, but that's a cool race to have on your resume.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It really was. It was for a longtime owner that I rode for over fences, Mrs. Stephen C. Clark, and it was a huge, huge win back in the day. It was 96, I believe, when I first started training.
It is. Here it is. 1996, Dadeen with Migliori riding.
Yeah. And actually the same kind of scenario. Went to the front and they left him alone and he jetted away. So I've won a handful of sprint stakes, but the bigger races have been the races that have been a mile plus. So we won the Dueling Ground Derby a few years ago with my fleet. And so I guess I have an affinity for the long turf.
So. I love it. You also, as part of you mentioned your riding days over the fences, and you won the Temple Gwathmi as a trainer.
I did. I won the Temple Gwathmi and the Turf Riders as a jockey several times, and got lucky enough to do it as a trainer too. Yes, sir.
Very cool. Well, Chuck, we haven't talked in too long, frankly, and this is a terrific turn of events. And this is a horse, obviously, that if he's this good, there's a lot of things that you can shop. Kentucky Downs, and who knows? I mean, there's all kinds of money to be won with a horse like this.
Yes, sir. We're going to space his races out. He has had in the past a history before I got him of being a bad bleeder and high strung in the paddock. And we've done some different things with him training wise to try to quiet him down a little bit, make him a little bit more chilled out. And so far, knock on wood, it seems to be working. But we're going to try to. I'll sit down with Matt and we'll pick our spots and hopefully map out a nice campaign for him where we can continue to win.
Well, he's a 7-year-old, and looking at the PPs, I mean, he can put races together. It's not a question of being races take a lot out of him, or what's your sense?
No, actually, he came back, and he seems great. I sent an earlier picture to Steve. He just he looks like he never ran, and he's happy here at Fair Hill. We're so lucky here, to have paddocks with grass in them, and he'll hack out back in the countryside for a week, get his feet back up underneath of him. But he does. He comes out of his races well. Just I think when they put that big of effort in, I'd like to give him plenty of time in between. He's a lovely horse. I think with the turf races, when you get into that caliber of a race, all the horses are talented in those races. It comes down to the trip, the jockey's strategy, and you can be eighth and have run a hell of a race in the turf race, beating a couple lengths. So it's just a matter of how it works out.
And he also, it's pretty clear that he also likes the turf up here. I mean, he likes Saratoga. He's got two wins in the three tries and put a line through the Bernard Baruch.
Yes. I think he's such a neat, handy horse. He really corners well on that inner turf. You can hug the rail with him. You can save every inch of ground. And he seems to really, really like the natural old turf that's there.
Yeah, and you mentioned before we got to wrap up, but you mentioned Fair Hill, and I know that Matt very pleased that you have all the options there, and a horse like this, run him up the turf gallops, run him on the all different keep his mind fresh. You know, sometimes that helps a horse like this.
It does. I mean, it's so quiet and peaceful here, and we have three different tracks to pick from. Plus, there's Fair Hill's almost 6,000 acres, so you got plenty of options to occupy their mind and keep them settled. So it's a beautiful facility. I'm just so lucky to be here.
Well, Chuck Lawrence, happy as can be that see you come back up to Saratoga, win a big race like this, and it feels like Glorious Empire has got more to give yet. So, continued success.
Thank you very much. You all have a great day.
I appreciate the visit, Chuck Lawrence. I haven't talked to Chuck in too long, and he, as we said, with Matt Shearer, Matt horses with Chuck and George Weaver and Carlos Martin. Carlos won, of course, on Sunday, and give George Weaver time. He'll win for Matt Shearer, too, before the meet's out. You watch. What race was that yesterday with Carlos? That was the eighth with Rocket Heat. This is a Glorious Empire, 62.5 claim. And nice to score like this. He had won a 50 claimer right out of that. It was claimed in May of last year for 62.5, and then won a 50 claimer, career best performance actually, at Saratoga. Tried the Bernard Baruch and led early, but then got overwhelmed. Bled in the Baltimore Washington Turf Cup and got the winter off. Came back here with Chuck and has put back-to-back wins together. Very nice optional claim win at Delaware under Edgar, as mentioned. And Edgar shows, somebody like Edgar telling you to run him longer, win a Bowling Green dead heat. That was fun. Chuck Lawrence, we owe Phil D'Amato a call for tomorrow. And got tons more to do. We'll do the Sunday racing recapping tomorrow. Got good part of Saturday, right? We got a lot of it done. And, of course, the Monday preview, thanks to Mike Beer. So we'll thank Chuck and Mike, Steve Asmussen, Johnny D, Dale Romans, Louis Carvajal Jr. Good luck today, everybody. Back with you tomorrow live, 9 o'clock. Replay 6 to 9. I'm just putting together the multis, so I'll have the opinions up at the website shortly. Talk to you in the morning. Thanks.
You have to go killing all the bees.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses. We build racehorses.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.